Kathy Hudson is Director of Human Resources at the National Security Agency. Dr. Nick Vassiloupoulos is Chief of Personnel Assessment Research and Development at NSA. And both of them joining me in studio to talk about the work that they're doing. Folks, thank you very much for your time today. Kathy, I want to start with you. You have a workforce strategy in place, obviously, that will serve the agency for the next 5 to 10 years. What are the elements of that to make sure that you have the team on board at the agency that you need to do the mission? Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me here today. I think our director, Admiral Rogers, who just came on board a little bit over a year ago, has really good insight on what we need to do strategically to ensure this amazing workforce that we have today is maintained in the future and we can continue to attract amazing talent to the agency. He has just recently stood up 12 groups under his director's charge to look at what do we need to do as far as investing in our workforce to ensure that we can retain, attract, and develop the talent that we're going to need for the amazing mission that we are facing, and that our workforce can stay ahead of the power curve. We can continue to ensure the cutting-edge skills that are required to evolve as fast as technology is evolving, as well as our adversaries are evolving. And so he's looking at, given the future that we have coming, particularly we're concerned with some tightening of the budget, how are we going to invest in this workforce? We know that the new workforce we're bringing on board, they want to learn, they want to grow, they want to tackle tough problems, they want to be innovative. They're going to want experiences that are not going to be just at NSA, but in academia, in the intelligence community, maybe even in private sector. Mm-hmm. And we've got to ensure all of those in our strategy for the future.
That's been a challenge for every agency in government to try to build that fluidity of the workforce into the strategies that they're building. Yeah. Understanding that it's less and less likely every day somebody's going to come to whatever agency it is, NSA or anybody else, and be there for X number of years, you know, a long period of time. They're likely to be there 2 or 3 years, gain some skills, leave, hopefully come back. Mm-hmm. And apply what they've learned other places.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. That was just spot on of one of the major challenges for the future. So the question is, what does the new 30-year career look like? And a lot of people say, Kathy, are you kidding me? They're not going to have a 30-year career at NSA, or maybe not within the government, to which I feel like I'm a little bit contrarian on that. Mm-hmm. We have a saying at work, keep them for 5, keep them for a career. Mm-hmm. I say keep them for life, but people say, Kathy, that's not so nice. So it takes a while for our employees to come in and really develop the skills they need to execute the tradecraft of our incredible mission. And so to think that employees would come in 2 to 3 years and be out the door is probably not going to serve them well. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it will serve our mission well. So if we look at a new 30 career that involves coming in, learning our mission, really learning the tradecraft, keeping the skills cutting edge, giving our employees great opportunity to continue to learn, give them amazing challenges where they really are creating technologies, procedures, things that people, I think, sometimes can't believe that we're doing or can be done. Also, we're going to look at, within that 30-year career, they're going to have a joint duty assignment. So as being a member of the intelligence community, we're going to send them somewhere else out of the building to learn what does NGA do, DIA, CIA, FBI, others. And they'll bring that new perspective back to us and contribute. And then possibly sending them out to academia or private sector. Mm-hmm. We really think they're going to need that experience, that really broad perspective in order to be able to bang home our mission. And so we're looking at really reinventing that new 30-year career. And we've talked to Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and to the Director of National Intelligence on reformulating this idea of the 30-year career.
It's a great strategy, it seems to me. It's because it's something that you can sell to a young person that appeals to exactly what he or she's interested in, and yet does suit the needs, not just of NSA, but the entire federal government. Nick, your title, as I mentioned, is Chief of Personnel Assessment Research and Development. So tell me about the mission of that office and the team, the work that your team does.
Well, we came on board in 2010, really to kind of reintroduce testing and applicant assessments into the hiring process. There was a clinical process in place, but we're talking about just getting at the basic knowledge, skills, and abilities that you need to perform a job. So we have done that, and we've kind of done it in piecemeal, working towards a large kind of system that we'll have in place. So one of the first things we did was we put in to our online application biographical questions. These are questions about education, training, experience, military experience for, because we are DOD and we want to bring people back on board. And those questions are embedded in the online application for our, and they address computer science, intelligence analysts, language analysts, and engineering jobs. Those are core mission jobs at the agency.
Mm-hmm.
So that information comes in, and then our, we will generate a report that will be given to hiring managers and recruiters that help them kind of sort through the resumes. So it's a standardized process. We're now leveling the playing field for everyone to have the same opportunity to provide information about themselves up front. So initially when we came on, we were having large numbers of people going through stacks and stacks of resume. This helps us reduce that process, kind of let hiring managers and recruiters focus on those resumes that are most critical or mm-hmm. most likely to be qualified mm-hmm. applicants. So that's one of the first things that we put in place. We put some other proctored testing in place for core mission jobs. So for some of our computer networking jobs, we've put in a two tests. One's just a basic knowledge test that assesses someone's ability to understanding of the basic concepts that will be taught in training. And another one's a logical reasoning test. And that test has taken attrition in some core training areas to from 20% to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really effective. And the bigger one we're doing, we just rolled it out recently, is what we consider to be the whole, you know, beginning to end process. And that's for our intelligence analysts and our language analysts. And that is rolling, in addition to the biodata and the proctor test, there will be an unproctored test that we are partnering with OPM on to deliver, that anyone who applies to a job in those two areas will then be given an invitation to complete these unproctored tests. They mm-hmm. get at inductive reasoning, some personal characteristics related to, you know, success in a job and fit with those specific skill areas, and then a test of writing proficiency.
So you used a term there that I don't think maybe 5 years ago folks would have thought of in the human resources area, but data. And we see data exploding, mm-hmm. its use to drive decisions all across the government. What has the trend that you've seen in your office since you stood it up in 2010 been toward assembling the data and presenting it to somebody like Kathy or hiring managers at the right. in the individual areas for them to be able to use it to decide, we like these five people and we mm-hmm. want to make sure we talk to them. The others didn't turn out to be, it seemed to be as well qualified as this cohort.
Well, the use of data is used in many ways, and I think that both improve the efficiency of the process, which is one thing, cost to the agency, people's time too. Mm-hmm. We don't want to waste their time bringing in people who aren't qualified here, and also the quality of the applicants. So as I said earlier about the biodata, we use that data that's from their resume and then the questions that we have embedded in an online application to provide a searchable report where hiring managers or technical recruiters can go through and kind of funnel people who they think are right for their jobs. And that allows them to efficiently reduce the number of people they want down. So up front, that's the initial part. But the collection of these test scores that we're getting are really helping to really identify a very small set of people who are then could then be invited in for an interview by the hiring manager, and they make the final hiring decision. But when worked together, they're all independent assessments, but part of a system. Together, they prove both the efficiency of the process and the quality of the applicants.
Kathy, if I was going to guess, I would guess that folks in NSA probably are more used to the idea of data at least contributing to the hiring process because of the testing that you've done historically. That's not the case all across the government. So is it possible that cultural shift has been a little easier for you and your colleagues to help folks understand that it's okay to have this information and that hiring can be a little bit of science in addition to being a lot of an art?
Oh, I think you're spot on. Our mission is data driven. Mm-hmm. So our workforce, it's embedded in the DNA of the workforce at NSA that we use data for all kind of reasons. Gathering data, we're helping government leaders make decisions based on data that's generated by NSA. So this was just a natural extension that the hiring managers now would have really good data in order to make excellent decisions. But let me just add one more quick thing to what Nick was saying. We're using data just like Google, Facebook, and others to really drive our human resources programs. You know, what are the desires of the workforce? What are the things that the talent we want to hire, what are they looking at? What are they thinking about NSA? What do they want in a career? We watch very closely our attrition, our retention, and we even have amazing health and wellness programs at NSA, and we're using data to drive our health and wellness programs.
One of the data points, or one of the ways that people are using data in the HR field all across government, is an ongoing dialogue with employees. And mm-hmm. you told us a couple of years ago when you joined us the last time, Kathy, about more communication being important with job applicants. I'm seeing that trend among the already hired, the folks who are already on board.
Yep.
Are you doing the same thing at NSA?
Yeah, we have, you're spot on with regard to the Lean Six Sigma study, mm-hmm. which said we had to do a better job, a more high touch approach with our applicants, because that is really demanded in the area of talent that we're going after. So as you know, we're going after STEM, language analysts, and Intel analysts, a very hot market for all of that. And they want to be hearing from their prospective employers at least once or so a week or a month. Hey, where am I in the job processing? And for us, as you know, it takes a little bit longer to process candidates. So we really have engaged applicants in a much different way. And social media has really become our friend. Mm. We have a big social media presence, and we're also using social media to help enhance the communications as well. I just think about how the hiring process has really evolved since we last have our conversation. We're building for the entire intelligence community a brand new applicant gateway. Oh my God, this is going to be such an amazing tool. It's going to have a super web front end. We're going to have a job exploration tool. We are building in all of Nick's assessment and testing capability. And then we're going to have really wonderful, quick response. By that, I mean being able to upload information from the low side, unclassified, to the high side, classified stuff, so we can really begin processing. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do this on behalf of the whole intelligence community. Our partners right now are DNI, NGA, and DIA. So we are really stepping into that more efficient space of how do we do this across the whole community, build a portal for everyone to come to, and also how do we do shared services on behalf of this intelligence community in a really good way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and data is driving our decisions on building the applicant gateway as well.
Shared services is a very hot buzzword right now, Nick. Are there standards that you use that other agencies can adopt or have adopted, or are you working, collaborating with other agencies in the Intel community or out to determine some of these benchmarks by which you're assessing and evaluating candidates?
Absolutely. So Kathy mentioned the applicant gateway, the IC candidate gateway. One of the things we're doing is, I'd mentioned earlier, the biographical questions. We're kind of revising that to incorporate questions that would pertain to NGA and to DIA. They're general enough to apply to everyone, but the idea is that they can use the same, generate the same reports that we generate mm-hmm. there. And the unproctored test I talk about, the test of inductive reasoning, those personal characteristics and test of writing, are purposely designed to be generalizable. Those are attributes that have been found in research, over 60 years of research, to be predictive of performance in most jobs in the world, certainly in the U.S. So we purposely designed that so that if any other agency wants to come on board and do the steps to validate and demonstrate that it's valid for them, they could just turn it on when yeah. it's necessary. So the gateway, through that point, if you think of the gateway as in terms of assessments, as the biographical questions or inventory, and then the unproctored assessments, it is designed to be generalizable across agencies.
Kathy, the federal government as a whole, and the Intel community in particular, experienced, it's been called a trough in the 90s up to about 9/11,
mm-hmm.
Where you had, at the time of 9/11, a whole lot of people that were very experienced and a whole lot of people that were rather new and not much in between.
Not much in the middle, right?
And we're back in a budget time where I imagine you're feeling some pressures. The agency as a whole is feeling some pressures when it comes to hiring. How do you kind of piecemeal this strategy so that you avoid that situation 10, 15, 20 years from now when maybe none of us will be paying attention to these issues, but your successors will have potentially the same problem that we were looking at in the mid-2000s.
So we have tremendous lessons learned from the 90s that we really have brought forward now as we, right after 9/11, as Congress was very good to us and has given us, you know, a decade of magnificent hiring. For this year, we'll bring in over 1,500 brand new employees. Last year, we brought in over 1,200. We have been very thoughtful and purposeful with regard to the hiring we've done over the last 10 years. We looked at where was our trough and how do we need to rebuild that in order to ensure going forward. We had that very deep expertise and the management and leadership in the middle that was really going to be critical to us going forward in the future. We were thoughtful in building that back over the last 10 years, as well as ensuring we built back the proper mix of analytical skills, STEM skills. We rebuilt the enablers, the support services, but not to the degree that we had prior to 9/11. So if you look at our chartology or our data, you'll see that the agency is in a very good place today, but based on those very hard lessons learned from the past.
And so that's enabled you to build a workforce that you'll need for 2020 and 2025.
Yes. Yep.
And not build what you wish you had in 2005.
Exactly right. We've built the workforce now that's going to be able to take us forward, mm-hmm. that's going to lead us into the future. And we're getting better now at saying, all right, so if you have the workforce where you need to be, at least the shape of the workforce, how do you sustain that workforce? You got to continue. We're going to have attrition. Attrition from the perspective of retirements is going up, which is what we've been tracking and expecting, so it's no surprise. But you got to sustain that workforce going forward. You got to have good training and development. You got to have excellent leadership and management approaches in place and good succession planning. So these new millennials that we brought on board are really crucial to us because they're the future of the agency.
Mm-hmm. That retirement wave that we've been expecting to see, though, it's never materialized mm-hmm. really in the way that folks thought it would in the late 90s, early 2000s at any agency. I'm sure you've seen the same thing at
right.
NSA. We did a special report on it a couple of weeks ago called the reverse retirement wave because the workforce is actually getting older and older and older.
Right.
How does that impact the way that you try to build a strategy when maybe folks aren't leaving as quickly as you thought they were going to, and you may wind up with more folks that are older 5 years from now than you have today?
So it is an interesting phenomenon, isn't it? Because we had expected a really large retirement wave. We did see the CSRS really kind of leave according to the data that we developed. So they hit their retirement date, and we usually see about 25% leave the first year, then we see about another 40% leave the second year, and so on. But we're not quite sure the psychology of the FERS retirees. You know, the fully FERS retirement group is just now entering into that window. So the question is, will they follow the CSRS trend or not? And we're thinking not. Mm-hmm. We're thinking they will stay in place longer for a variety of reasons, but a few of them are they have kids in college right now. We all know about paying college tuition. Mm-hmm. They also have parents who are aging, and they are the ones caught in the middle of that. Remember, we've talked about now this new generation, the sandwich generation, parents and kids. So we think we'll see them stay longer in the workplace, and we're looking forward to embracing that. They've come through 9/11. They've gone through media leaks with us. They've been through the good times and the bad times with regard to budget. And they can help be reassuring to this brand new workforce on, hey, been there. We can get through it. We can get through it together. And also they have really deep skills, and we need to transfer those skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think the administration is looking at what are some of the ways now we can flex around this new workforce that might be getting older. Phase retirement is one thing that we're looking at. How does that fit into our workforce strategy? Don't know yet, mm-hmm. but we are working on it.
The work that you're doing, how do you want to extend it? What are the things that you'd like to add in the next several years to be able to provide more data, higher quality data, whatever, improving the product that you provide to Kathy and her colleagues?
Well, there's a number of ways I think that the data could be improved. Just getting more data and having it structured in a way that's usable is an important thing. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think that we'd like to do, we already kind of do, but we'd like to be more rigorous in, is feeding that information on the quality of the applicants we're getting back to recruiting. So as Kathy mentioned earlier, high touch is a big part of this. But there's only so many people you have, so to be able to reach back and to know who to actually follow up with and have high touch would be really useful. It'll also help us target some of the places that have a better yield for us. So I think that's part of it too, and it will also allow us to reach people who are previously haven't been reached. I think moving forward, what we'd like to do is have more robust assessments in specific mission areas, right? That areas where. At where NSA's business happens. So I've already mentioned a couple of places that we've done it. We have it for the analysts. We also have it for some of our core computer science areas, but there's a few other areas we'd like to do that in. We also work closely with our training organization who develops certifications for these as they go through. So first someone comes on board, we select them, then they have to go through a process to be certified to go on job. So we work with them not only on the design and the evaluation of what needs to be part of that program, but how you would go about assessing whether someone should be certified in those jobs. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the core ways I think we want to move forward.
Yeah, let me riff off of that just a little bit, Nick, because Nick and his team have done the front end, the hiring and recruitment piece, but working very closely with our Associate Director for Education and Training. So we have a cryptologic school at NSA, and they are really responsible now for generating the new curriculum, the new science behind a lot of this cybersecurity that has become so important to our business. Nick is actually teaming with ADET to look at, there's particular core missions of our business that are going to require certification. And Nick is looking at what does that really entail and who are the right people who can go into certification while ADET is developing the curriculum behind certification. And how does that all spin together? It really is a new art and science all in there together. So we're really fortunate to have Nick, his expertise, the team that we strategically decided to invest in, this talent, working in association with education and training to bring about really the new certifications, the new science, and develop this new mission talent that we're going to need going forward.
We just have a couple of minutes left, Kathy, and I want to thank both you and Nick for coming today and talking to me about these issues. Are there tools or resources that you don't have now that you're either developing to use in the future or would like to develop in the future? And everybody wants more money, so I'm going to take that one off the table.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, my gosh. When it comes to tools?
Yes.
Absolutely. We have a human resource management system that's built on PeopleSoft, and we're getting ready to convert to PeopleSoft 9.2. Folks are probably going to say, God, she's going to say something positive about PeopleSoft. And that is 9.2 is going to be more configurable for us. We're not going to have to do a lot of customization, but we are going to be able to do the things that are important to track this evolving workforce. And that's what I need. I need really strong IT underpinnings that will enable me to get more data out efficiently, make it usable, has to be in a format. I've got to build dashboards for senior leadership so they can be looking instantaneously at attrition, both internal and external. How is the workforce moving around? So really, for me, strong IT underpinnings, a really important tool going forward.
Nick, any final thoughts you want to share before we wrap up?
I think one of the things we'd like to do in terms of the assessment space would be to, right now, our tests are used to make what I call go-no-go decisions. You're either in or you're not. But we really have areas where people have strengths in some, you know, say, for instance, you were talking about cybersecurity, Kathy. You can be strong in certain areas and not strong in others. And right now, our assessments aren't they're not currently robust enough to be able to capture, you know, the specific areas of need, right? That you need to develop this area, but you're strong here. So moving forward, I think we'd like to do that so that we would then be able to bring on more people and then have this very specific onboarding plan for them so they know which trainings they need to go to, where we need to get them up to speed. So I think that would be a major focus for us. And we not only work with ourselves, but with the ADET, our training group.
All of which we can track in our system.
Yeah, we can track in our system and it'd be there. So I think that's a big issue, is opening up the aperture by allowing us to get at developmental opportunities as well.